Hope everyone had a good time last week in Eilat. Hope you had a chance to, as you're hiking Har Shlomo, to get a few Divrei Torah over there. This week's parsha is Vayetze. I thought this week that maybe one of these days I'm going to start at the end of the parsha, because I find that every time I'm at the beginning of the parsha, I never get past the first aliyah. It's very hard to get past the first aliyah. But all right, it is what it is. The parsha begins. Vayetze Yaakov mi Beersheva ve'yalech Haran. Yaakov leaves from Beersheva. He goes to Haran, and in the middle of his journeys, he has to go to sleep. Vayachalom, he has a dream. Vehine sulam utzav arza v'rosho magia shamayim. He has a dream, famously, with a ladder. Probably all of us at some point during kindergarten or first grade or second grade drew this picture or made it out of some sort of Play-Doh. What do you call it? Fimo. Fimo was the word I was looking for. He has the dream with the ladder in the ground. Mutzav arzav v'rosho magia shamayim. V'hineh malachei Elokim olim v'yoredim bo. So I'd like to spend a little bit of time devoted to this ladder. The Baal HaTurim, those of you that like Gematria, the Baal HaTurim is a great place to look. Every week he has, much of his parish is Gematria. So the Baal HaTurim, Rav Yaakov Baal HaTurim, says that the Gematria of Sulam, he has a few over there. Sulam is Zekise HaKavod, Sulam is Kol, Sulam is Sinai. The Gematria that he gives us for Sulam is Sulam equals Mammon, and Sulam equals Oni. Right, so let's just do the math together. Samech is 60. Okay. Lamed is
30.
60 and 30 is
90.
Mem is
40.
90 and 40 is 100. And Vav. So 130 plus 6, 136. Good. Now let's do the gematria of Mammon. Mem equals.
Wait, isn't it 40. Without a Vav here?
Mem equals. It doesn't matter if it isn't. And now we're up to 80. Vav is 86, and another Nun, 50, so 136. And Oni, Ayin is, okay, Nun is 50, now we're up to 120, plus Yud is, so that's 130, and Vav is 136. Okay, so Mammon and Oni equal Sulam. What's the significance of that? What's the significance of that? So this sulam, as we'll get to shortly, the sulam represents Avodas Hashem, right? Arza, Magia, Shamayma, it's our steps to serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what the Baal HaTurim is trying to hint to us is that it doesn't matter if you are mammon filled, or it doesn't matter if you're oni, if you're totally poor, either of those extremes is irrelevant. You're still obligated to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Avodas Hashem. The Gemara in Yuma and Daf Lamed Hei Amud Beis talks about people that learn Torah, or rather people that don't learn Torah. And the Gemara says that they're going to ask you, why did you learn Torah? So you might say, oh, I appreciate you asking me. Thanks for not being Choshed B'Ksherim. The reason why I didn't learn Torah was because I was poor. It's very hard to be poor and learn Torah. I mean, after all, I had to make sure that I have enough money to support my family. All right? The Gemara in Kiddushin even says, those of us that are learning Kiddushin this year, which is all of us, that you should try to earn some money before you get married. So I didn't have money. I had to work hard. So you know what they're going to say to him? They're going to say, you were poor. That stinks. Were you lacking more than Hillel? Do you know how poor Hillel was, the Gemara says? Hillel, before he became Nasi, was so poor, he used to make one trepnik a day. The Gemara's trepnik is like but it's like a dollar a day. Now it is very, very little amount. And of that amount, he would take half and give it to his family, which was sacrificed on his family's part as well. They were willing to eat, dry cereal instead of meat and chicken. And with the other half of that money, he would pay the Beis Medrash, and he would go learn in the Beis Medrash. Right? And then the Gemara tells the story. You've probably heard the story. One day, he was unable to rent himself out. He couldn't get a job, and he couldn't get his trepnik. So what did he do? He thought to himself, I have an idea. I'll climb up on the roof, and through the chimney, I'll listen to the shir of Shmaya and Avtalion. But much to his chagrin, this is Hillel. Hillel's talking. Much to his chagrin, what happened?
Snow.
Started to snow, and he was covered in 3 feet of snow, the Gemara says. The next day, they get to the basement, and they're like, it's darker than usual. What's blocking the light from penetrating through the chimney? And they climb up, and they find Hillel is there. It was Shabbos happens to be, and they say, we have to be Mechal of Shabbos to save his life. They warm up the fire. They give him a hot drink, and then say, you will never not be allowed into the Beis Medrash again. So there you have an example of Oni. And then the Gemara says, well, what about the other extreme? You come to a person, you say, why didn't you learn? Well, I was, you know, I'm filthy rich, and being filthy rich has with it its obligations and its commitments, and I didn't have time to learn. I have to manage all of my estate, and I have to make sure I want to give the money to tzedakah, etc. So say, well, you couldn't have possibly been any richer than Rav Elazar ben Charsom. The Gemara says, Rav Elazar ben Charsom, his father left him in Yerusha, I think it was 1,000 cities, 1,000 provinces, that, and corresponding to those 1,000 cities and provinces, he also had 1,000 ships in the sea. And the Gemara tells us that one day, Rav Elazar ben Charsom used to go out and learn. One day, as he was going out to learn, he was passing by a town, and they told him, hey, you got to work. So he says, no, I just leave me, I want to learn Torah. He said, no, this town is owned by Elazar ben Charsom, and since you live and you're walking by the town, there's a tax to pay. You're going to have to put in your share. He says, no, please just let me learn Torah. Oops. I'm very sorry, my wife's in America. How do you shut this off? I got it. Airplane mode is like shutting it off, right? Yeah. So the Gemara says, please just let me learn. And that was his passion, that was his life. The Gemara says that the fact that they didn't even know who he was, right? They didn't recognize him as Lazar ben Charsom means that he wasn't involved in his daily business. He hired somebody to be in charge of his business, and he would learn Torah. So you have no excuse whether you're poor or rich. Basically, what this Gemara is trying to teach us, and what this Bala Turim is trying to teach us, there's no excuse for not learning Torah. I would add even a little bit more nowadays. We don't have the excuse of, you know, I'm rich or I'm poor, but we sometimes try to use a different excuse. You don't understand. The school that I went to, it's not like that. Like, I can't become a gadol b'Torah, right? I don't want to name a school because I don't want to incriminate any one particular institution of learning. But say, you just understand. If you look around in my grade, you would see, like, the things that I'm surrounded by, it's impossible for me to rise above it and become a Talmud Chacham. So, fact is that that's not true. The Rosh Yeshiva of Demir, Zatzal, that just passed away last year, Rav Nelson Finkel, was a product of a Jewish day school. He happened to have been in Chicago. He went to a school called Ida Crown. I'm sure many of you have friends from Ida Crown, and you know that Ida Crown is, one might try to say, hey, I went to Ida Crown, how could I possibly become a Talmud Chacham? The answer is, you can. Look at Rav Nelson Tzvi Finkel. I have a student from many years ago, without telling you his name, although you definitely don't know him. Either way, he went to a school in the New York, New Jersey area, much like you and I. And in the school, he was involved in everything that the school had to offer, you know, in the fullest sense of the word. Math, chemistry, and all the extracurriculars as well. You know, he was a regular guy. And he came Shana Aleph. And at around Pesach time, I had announced that we were going to do a competition in the yeshiva called Who Wants to Be a Mishnayer? Right? Instead of Millionaire, Mishnayer. And study Pirkei Avos. And if you know, and there were great prizes. You know how Who Wants to Be a Millionaire works? Like if you answer one question, you get $100 and then $200 and then... So it's the same thing. If you answer one question, you got, at that time it was a Jewish music CD. And if you answer two questions, then you got whatever it is. And the final prize was, one of the prizes was dinners at Burgers Bar. And if you, well, the nice prizes. And then the final prize was, I think, a Gemara, a set of Gemara, and a Rambam, and an Oscar Chumash, I think. Very, very worthwhile, you know. So he decided that he was going to attempt his He's going to attempt his luck in this. And I want to stress to you, he was just like me and you. Right? And that has to be the starting point of the story. Just like me and you. Anyway, so we're doing that. Who wants to be a Mishnayer? It was the last Shabbos of the year. And he gets called up to the chair, you know, the way you sit across from each other. And ask him question number one, question number two. He makes it all the way. He used the lifeline at one point. He still had two lifelines left for the last question. But he gets to the last question. He's going, you know, he doesn't want to stop while he's ahead. He wants the set of Shas and Rambam and Art Scroll. Chumash. And the last question was the following. He said, the question was, I was feeling somewhat sadistic at the time. How many times does it say Derech Eretz in Pirkei Avos? 3, 4, 5, 6. And the most amazing and incredible thing in the world happened. He did the following. First he asked for a lifeline, eliminate two choices. Okay. And then he did the most amazing thing. Moshe kibel Torah misinai. That's what it, just in the seat. Moshe kibel Torah misinai umasir le-Yeshua. Yeshua l'skenim. Skenim le-Nevim. Nevim asir l'anchiknes. He went one by one. He said all of Pirkei Avos by heart. 1, 2. And he nailed it. He nailed the answer. No different than me and you, this boy. And I'll tell you what was an amazing thing about this. I was able to watch the whole Beis Midrash, because you sit facing the contestant, so he had his back to everyone, and I was watching the contestant. This is the end of the year. What was amazing was that some people were like glued like this. They're like, wow, this is unbelievable. And some people were fidgeting nervously in their seat, trying to look away. You know, they were like moving, you know, very uncomfortable. Like if I would look at them, they would like try to avoid my eye contact. And you know why they were very uncomfortable? I'll tell you the pshat. They were uncomfortable because they knew the boy, and they knew that they could be him. And they knew at that point, he had showed them in a very, very real way that they could have been sitting there in that chair saying Pirkei Avos by heart, and they were kicking themselves in the pants. Like, wow, I wasted my time. Unbelievable. I could have been that, and I have nothing to show for having spent a year here. Very little to show for having spent a year here. They were upset about it. None of us have an excuse. Not if we're rich, not if we're poor. You have no background excuse. This is Sulam Utsav Arza. Whether it's Mammon or Oni, you always have to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and we can all do it. Even us. Okay, next idea. On that same sulam, it says that the sulam was mutzav arza, v'rosho magia hashamayim. There's a very, very important lesson here in general in Avodas Hashem. Sometimes we look at the final product and we say, oh, I want to be that, and we go for that final step, not recognizing that between where we are and that final step, there is 20 other steps that we have to follow, right? For example, like a guy that wants to be a very, very good basketballer, he sees Michael Jordan taking off from the foul line and dunking it, a la 1986, slam dunk competition. I assume all of you are familiar with the videotape. Okay. And he says to himself, yeah, I want to do that. And rather than pump weights and work on his height and whatever, he goes out and he tries to take off from the foul line, and he lands flat on his face, not even close. But it's the same thing in Avodas Hashem. You can't just see the final product. Oh, I want to be a gadol. It's not. We're too used to living in the generation of instant coffee, instant microwave, warm up your food instantly. Everything, we think that everything's supposed to happen instantly, but it's not like that. It's sulam. There has to be a sequential step after step after step. We'll get to that a little bit later. But for now, I want to stress on the mutzav arza v'rosho magia shamayma. Arza is eretz, is land. And sometimes we think that avodas Hashem and eretz are contradictory. Right? For example, in the church, so a priest has to be celibate. Right, there's an emphasis on trying to remove yourself from this worldly type of pleasures, and if you're not removing yourself from this worldly type of pleasures, then it calls into question your religious commitment. And what we're learning over here is mutzav arza. You should in fact be stationed. Mutzav means stationed, standing in eretz. Rosho magia shamayim. With eretz as your foundation, you can get to shamayim. For example. there was the Griz, Rav Yitzchak Zev was on Shabbos afternoon sitting at one of his shiurim that he was giving, and he turned to his son and he asked the son, can you please get me a cup of water? And the son got him a cup of water. He didn't drink it though. It was just sitting there the whole time. In the middle of the shiur, they would stop for mincha, and then they would come back and continue the rest of the shiur. Right? So they came back, they stopped, they went to mincha, they came back, and after mincha, he turned to his son and he said, I don't need a cup of water. So the son was like, Abba, I don't understand. You asked me for a cup of water, then you're not saying that you don't need it? So he said to his son the following. He said, every day a person has the obligation to make 100 brachos. 100 brachos a day. Normally we clear it by a mile, because between the 19 brachos that we have in every Shemoneh Esrei and everything else, so you're, you know, benching and you're clear. No problem. We all cover 100 easy. But on Shabbos, we only get up to about 82 or 83, I don't remember. So you need to try to supplement it a few other ways, the remaining 18 brachas that are missing. So some people say, well, you yotze with chazar hashatz or whatever, but ideally if you can make 100 brachas, that's great. So have a snack here and there. Some people walk around and they smell besamim on Shabbos, they make a bracha for him and them besamim. The Griz told his son, I was holding by 98. Right? I had figured out that with shalosh shittos and everything, I'm at 98. So I needed two more brachas, the shahakol and the bro nefashos. When we went to Mincha and I got the aliyah, I no longer needed the drink of water. That story is beautiful because it highlights that he sees this world as an opportunity to use it for his avodas Hashem. I drink because I need, I'm using it as a vehicle to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If I don't need it anymore to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I got my mea brachos. Okay, if you're thirsty, obviously drink it. But if you're not thirsty, I don't need it. But the point is that he recognized that this world is an opportunity to get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a similar Chassidish Maisa from Rav Moshe Mizambor and his brother Rav Tzvi Mizichov, but I guess we'll have to use it for a different time. Okay. I want to touch base again on that foundation of step after step and this instant Talmud Chacham. The Pasuk says, after he wakes up from the dream, Pasuk Tetzayin, Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnaso, Yaakov woke up from his sleep, Vayomer, before we go on, I'd like to acknowledge Ben Tellis, who's listening to us. I told him I would give him a shout-out. Hi, Ben. How are you? I hope you're enjoying the shiur so far. Keep steiging. Okay. Pasuk Tetzayin. I wish I could have been a more natural shout-out than that, but... Okay. Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnato, Vayomer, Achen Yesh Hashem Bamakom Hazeh. Yaakov wakes up from his sleep and he says, oh, my gosh, after such a powerful dream, with imagery of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and having a nevuah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling him, I'm going to watch you and guard over you. He says, wow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here. V'anuchi lo yadati, and I did not know. So what does Rashi say, I did not know? Had I known, I wouldn't have gone to sleep. Why would he have not gone to sleep? So one answer is, because if it's such a holy place, it's inappropriate to sleep in a holy place. Right? You come to the Beis HaMikdash and you go to sleep. What kind of business is that? You don't go to sleep in the Beis HaMikdash. But the Sfornus says a little bit different. The Sfornus says, had I known that this was a holy place and I can get Nevuah, I would have prepared myself for the Nevuah. I wouldn't have gone to sleep. People ask in the Sfornus, what are you talking about? You did get the Nevuah. So what do you care? What I would have prepared myself for the Nevuah. But you did get Nevuah. So what are you worried about? So good, you went to sleep. Explains Rav Kook that it's true he got the Nevuah. But truth be told, it is better to earn the Nevuah than to just get it as a free gift. That which you work hard for is a lot more worthwhile than that which you do not invest in and put in effort. Right. There's a story that one time the girl was really struggling with a sugya, and he was struggling and struggling and struggling, and finally, again, you have to understand that the Gra is and it operates in a different plane than we can't begin to comprehend the godless of the Gra. So after working on the sugya for a long time and he still wasn't chapping it, a shliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to him and he said, I'll give you pshat in the sugya. And the Gra said, absolutely not. Get away from here. Right? Go Dorton, as Rav Mamet said. Get away from here. I don't want it. And he says, what does that mean, you don't want it? He says, anything for which you're not yoga, anything that you don't achieve, is not worthwhile. I remember when I was in high school, the New York Times Magazine published, for lack of a better word, an expose on lottery winners. Right? And they had this crazy statistic. Lottery winners end up losing their money very, very, very quickly. Right? And everyone says, look, it won't happen to me. Let me win the lottery and I'll prove them wrong. But the Maisa, everyone that did win the lottery is one of those people that said, oh, when I win the lottery, it won't happen to me. So I was trying to figure out, why is it that lottery winners lose their money faster than everyone else? There are exceptions. Some people manage. But why is it? I think the answer is this. Because they don't invest their own money. It's found money, right? What happens if you're walking in the street and you find $100? It's, oh, great, I found $100. Now I can get that, whatever extravagant thing that you want to get that you would never think about getting with your hard-earned cash. Oh, no, I'm not going to spend money on that. I work hard for my money. But when it's found money, yeah, now I can buy that thing that I've always wanted to buy. It's the same thing with Talmud Torah. Anything that we earn, that we work and earn, so we're careful about, we guard, and we make sure that we're committed to entirely. But if it's just found, if we don't put in the effort, then easy come, easy go. I know it today, and it's gone tomorrow. You have to understand that when it comes to Avodas Hashem, we want to put in the effort. We want to put in the effort. Right? So that's what Yaakov Avinu said. I wish I would have known that there would have been an opportunity of Nevuah. Because it's true that he got the Nevuah, but he got the Nevuah without hard work. And that was troubling to him. Okay. Interesting board coming up. I think interesting. And that same pasuk, Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnaso Vayomer, Yaakov wakes up and he says, Achein Yesh Hashem B'makom Hazeh. Ve'anochi lo yadati. Achein means indeed there is Hashem in this place. Ve'anochi lo yadati. And I, anochi means ani, lo yadati. I didn't know. So, I saw in the Sefer, I think it was Haksof ve'Hakabbalah, but I can't be sure, and unfortunately I did not write it there. He says, he explains the pasuk the following way. He says, you know, there's a pasuk in there's a nevuah in Yecheskel. Yecheskel HaNavi has what we call the Ma'aseh HaMerkava. He sees a vision of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when he sees the vision of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he sees the Kiseh HaKavod. And he tells us what are the four things that are in Kiseh HaKavod. An Aryeh, a lion. A Kruv, right, one of the caribs. An Nesher, an eagle. And the picture of... what's the fourth sign? Yaakov Avinu. A human face. Says Yaakov Avinu the following. After he's seen this godly image, he's just saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, Achein Yesh Hashem B'makom Hazeh. I knew always that there was Achein. Achein is an acronym. Aryeh, Kruv, and Nesher. I always knew that on the Kiseh HaKavod there is those images. But Anochi, that there's an image of me, of a human being, that a human being can get to the point of being on the Kiseh HaKavod, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would desire me as much as he desires those things that don't have Bechir HaChofshes, right? And Aryeh does the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? He doesn't have choice. And Nesher, Akruv, they're all, right? Akruv representing Malachim, they all do the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Akruv is an angel.
Willy-nilly. They all do it willy-nilly. Right? They're forced to do it. There's no Bechir HaChofshes there. But Anochi, but even me, who sometimes fails and sometimes, you know, chooses wrong. Even I'm on the Kiseh HaKavod, Anochi, lo yadati. That, I had no clue. And this is, it's my favorite piyut on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, one of the things that we sing is a piyut called Avita Te'ilah. You taiva, you have a taiva Kadosh Baruch Hu for Tehillah, for praise, and the whole piyut, the whole song is, although you have angels that dance up and down for you, and they're fiery, and they're great, Avita Tehillah, you desire praise from a person who is down on earth, made of dust, who fails often, etc. And it's just a juxtaposition of, although you have great angels, you desire praise from... It's specifically because of this struggle, and perhaps it relates to the point that we made before, because we struggle, and because we have a difficult time, when we overcome, that's the greatest praise that we can give HaKadosh Baruch Hu. With all of our struggles, which means the following, just to put it in layman's term. Imagine tomorrow morning is Friday, right? A lot of us will stay up late tonight. Not all of us, some of us. And then tomorrow morning, the alarm clock is going to go off. And we're going to be struggling. Oh man, I was up so late last night. For a good reason, I was learning late last night. And now it's 8 o'clock. Oh gosh. I'm having a difficult time waking up. I'll snooze once. And you hit the snooze button. And then the alarm goes on again. And you're like, oh boy, it's really hard for me. But I really should. But it's really hard. And while you're doing this, right, Michael and Gavriel and Rafael and Uriel are coming to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they're like, hey, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look at this new square dance we just invented for you. And then, ready guys, line up the four sides, let's see. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, leave me alone. I'm not interested in you right now, Michael, Gavriel, Rafael, and Uriel. I'm much more interested in Jake Wielomanski struggling to get out of bed. That's much more exciting for me. Right? And he's watching and he's saying, please do it, please do it. And you're like, oh gosh, can I do it, can I do it? And then finally, like, you roll the foot off the bed and you're like, all right, I'm going to go to Nzil Sidan. And when you do it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, yes! You know, Avita Te'ilah, that's the greatest praise that we can give HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The fact that there's an Aryeh, a Nesher, a Kruv, okay, big deal. Anochi, even me with all my struggles? Absolutely, you with all your struggles. That is the greatest praise that you can give HaKadosh Baruch Hu, coming through despite all the struggles. And he understands that sometimes we'll fail, but nevertheless, for those successes, it's great. Okay. The pasuk continues. Right? The parsha continues a little bit.
It's the next word.
Yeah. Yaakov makes a neder. Vayida Yaakov neder lemor. Yaakov says, listen, God, if in fact you'll be with me, as you said, Ushmarani bader chazeh, and you'll watch over me, and you'll give me the food and the clothing, v'shavti v'shalom, etc. Kol asher titen li, everything that you give me, Aser ha'asrenu lach. I will give a tenth to you. I'll be mafresh a tenth. This is one of the makoros that a person is supposed to give maaser, that a person is supposed to give a tenth of his earnings to tzedakah. Rav Moshe Sternbuch in his Sefer Tam Vadas has an interesting diuk over here. It says, what does it say over here? It doesn't say, all the money that you give me, I'll give you a tenth. What does it say? It says,
Everything
that you give me, I'll give you a tenth. Right? There are many things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us that are intangible, that are not necessarily financial. For example, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you give me a seichel. You give me a brain. I'm Baruch Hashem. I see somewhat success in this endeavor. I'm a great historian. Right? Or I'm a great learner, or whatever it is. So I have a brain. You know what? Aser asrenu lach, that comes with great responsibility. Where is that brain power from? It's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I have to give you back a tenth in this also. In Panovich, Rav Shach used to have this thing, he used to call it Avodas HaKodesh, where he would insist that Talmidim would learn with less gifted Talmidim. You have to do it. Right? In Rav Shimon Shkob in Europe used to do that. And here's the kicker. The Gemara says that aser ta aser, that's partial sreya. The Gemara makes a drasha aser al menat shetit asher. Maaser is the one thing where you're allowed to test HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It says, if you give maaser, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises, I'll I'll cover the loss. Aser tit asher, you'll become rich. So the Panovich Arav, not the Panovich Arav Shach, who was Rosh Yeshiva Panovich, said that the same thing applies over here. If you give a tenth of your time and then give it to other people, you're capable. So why don't you spend some time having a chavrusa with someone who's less capable? That is guaranteed to raise your level of comprehension and learning as well. Even though you might think, oh, I'm wasting my time. I know everything. I'm just teaching it to him. I'm not learning anything new. It's not true. If you give of your time, if you give Meiser, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will pay you back and you'll be able to see fruits from that as well. Okay. We have to skip a lot of words because there is this one. Not even within this one word. We'll see if we get to both ideas. Yaakov marries Leah and Rachel. And Leah is blessed with having children, unlike Rachel, at least not initially. So she has Reuven, then she has Shimon, then she has Levi, and then she has Yehuda. And when she has Yehuda, she says, "Hapam Odes Hashem, I'm going to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore Vatikra Shmo Yehuda." That's why she called him Yehuda. Right? From the word Todah, Hoda, to give thanks. Where is this found? This is Pasuk Lamed Hei in Perek Chaf Tet. The Gemara says that until Leah came along and gave thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nobody had given thanks prior. This is a very, very strange Gemara. What do you mean nobody's ever given thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? When Yitzchak was born, for example, Avraham made a big, big mishteh. He made a big suda. Right? He brought korbanos. Yitzchak brought korbanos to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Noach, when he came out of the Teva, nobody's ever thanked HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What do you mean? So I want to give you two ideas. One which I said last year as well, but I think it bears repeating, and then the new one that I saw this year. First idea from Rav Shimon Schwab. Rav Shimon Schwab says that you have to understand the context of this thank you. He says, up until now, Leah has had three children, and each one of these children represents to her a tefillah. Right? What does she say when Reuven is born? Ah, Reuven, look, I have a son. And what was she hoping now that she has a son? God saw my plight, right? Ata, you have any ishi? Maybe now that I have a son, something that I share with Yaakov, maybe now he's going to love me. Right? Did it happen? Doesn't seem that way, because Vata arod batelet ben, she gives birth again, and she says, Shimon, why does she name him Shimon? Shema Hashem ki snua anochi. God recognizes that I'm less liked. Right? That we can discuss that a different time, and we should discuss it a different time. But what does that mean? So, because he heard my plight, he gave me this child also. Then Levi. What's Levi? Famous Rashi. I have one kid in this arm, one kid in this arm. I can't balance the third one on my foot. So what's going to happen now? Hapam yelavei shiela. Yaakov's going to have to come and be with me to help me with the kids. Right, I can't handle, right? All of these tefillahs, and we know that Yaakov's heart always stayed with Rachel. Basically, her tefillahs went unanswered. And we think that when the tefillah is unanswered, we don't necessarily need to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And comes Leah on the fourth child and says, Hapam Odet Hashem. Even though the answer has always been no, I'm still going to thank God. I need to thank Him even when the answer is no. And I want to demonstrate this in one of two ways. There's a song, I'd say it's a famous song because all country music is famous, it's just not to our general population. So there's a very, very famous country music artist, his name is Garth Brooks. And Garth Brooks has a song called Unanswered Prayers. And the song, I don't remember it top to bottom, it's a good song. I don't listen to country music. Somebody gave me this song and brought it to my attention because they thought it would be important. The song's like this. He describes about how him and his wife are going to a hometown football game. right? Because that's what you do when you're living in, you know, wherever you're living out there in the South. So me and my wife went to a hometown football game, and there in the game, we ran into my old high school flame, his old girlfriend in high school. And, you know, they were chatting, and he says, and I remember how we used to be in high school, you know, and I would get down on my knee and I'd pray, you know, if you'd only wish me this wish I wished back then, I would never wish for anything again. Please God, I just want to marry this girl. That's, I remember, says Garth, that's what I used to dream about every night. And then it goes into the chorus. As he's standing there with his wife, he says, some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers. As he's standing there in hindsight with his wife, the true love of his life, and he's thinking back to his obsession with this girl that he's not talking to, and he remembers, wow, thank God you didn't answer that prayer, because I can't imagine my life being any better than it is now. So sometimes the answer is no, and so we have to recognize that even for the no's we have to say thank you, because we don't always know what is best for us and what isn't. Hapam odez Hashem, you know what the answer has been? No, but maybe this is for the best. I will thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right, there's a... When we won't get a chance to say the second part, so I'll just give you one more story on this one. In 1994, there was a soldier kidnapped. His name was Nachshon Waxman. You might have heard the name Nachshon Waxman. So he was kidnapped. He was trying to tramp, and he was kidnapped. And he was being held in a house in Gaza.
No,
yeah, it wasn't Gaza. It was in... I forgot which settlement. It wasn't Bilacham either. Anyway, they called upon an army unit. The entire, you know, the Waxmans called upon Klal Yisrael, if you don't mind lighting an extra candle, those people that don't light Shabbos candles, please tonight light. Please daven for our son, Nachshon. And that night, the Israeli government, Ehud Barak was the Ramat Kal at the time, decided to try to storm the house and get him back. But it was a botched operation. They didn't put enough explosives on the door to blow the door off the hinges, which gave the terrorist inside enough time to react. They couldn't react by really fighting back, but it gave them enough time to react by killing Nachshon Waxman, and we weren't able to get him back alive, only his body. So already on Shabbos morning, I think this happened, they went to tell the Waxmans that this happened. They told them on Shabbos. And the word got out, and a few people came to the house to be with the Waxmans before the funeral. And one person asked Nachshon Waxman's father, he said, you know, what do you have to say now? All those tefillahs, all those, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't answer our tefillahs. You know, so he said, sometimes an Abba has to say no. It's not that the tefillahs weren't answered, they were answered, but the answer is no. A child asks me for unlimited candy, I'd say no. That doesn't mean that I didn't answer the prayer. It doesn't mean I didn't answer his request, and it doesn't mean that I don't care for him. I care for him very much, and that's why I'm refusing his request for unlimited candy. So the pain is great, and I don't know how I'm going to survive this, said Mr. Waxman. But I recognize that no is also part of God's master plan. And that was Leah's recognition of Apam Odeh Hashem. All right, I'm sorry we didn't get to the vort on the other vort. Next year, Bli Neder.